After the holidays, there's so much to clean up and get ready for the coming year. This leaves me exhausted and a lot of things falling off my to-do list. It's time to lock in, and Omaha Steaks delivers everything you crave to reset after the holidays. An order from them means having high-quality Omaha Steaks on hand at all times. I'm a big meat lover myself, and I always go with medium rare, but there's also plenty of poultry and other options available. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. A family-owned company with over 100 years of expertise in the meat industry. Let Omaha Steaks deliver high-quality proteins right to your door. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide during their end-of-season sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code YUM at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM. Terms apply. See site for details. Go to www.omahasteaks.com to get 50% off site-wide during their end-of-season sale. And use promo code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. Thanks to Omaha Steaks for sponsoring us.
You asked for it. Here it is. It's a podcast from Apathetic Enthusiasm.
In this episode, we talk about technical difficulties, our flops and flips, and all the fun that we're going to have. It's Apathetic Enthusiasm. Hi, Brandon.
Hi.
How are you doing?
I'm doing pretty fantastic.
But look at us. We finally got together on the same evening to record a podcast. No technical difficulties whatsoever.
None.
Yeah, I want to tell a quick story right up on the top, right? I've had a busy 2 weeks, a lot going on. Mm-hmm. But you know, we recorded a podcast 2 weeks ago. As we normally do. I think it was a Monday night. If memory serves. And we talked about New Year's, we talked about all sorts of things. And as is my responsibility as a half of the Apathetic Enthusiasm brand, I record and post the video content on our YouTube. And I have a pretty normal workflow where I just drag the raw file unedited into YouTube, create the post mere minutes after we're done recording, and then I hit publish. And you know, all bets are off. Apparently, 2 weeks ago, that was the last time I sat down at this computer. Because I hopped on the computer, opened up all my windows to get ready to podcast, and there it was, the YouTube browser, still sitting at the screen where I'm supposed to hit publish, but didn't actually hit it. I know it was scanning our last episode for like content. It does scans to make sure we don't, you know, aren't breaking any YouTube rules. But apparently I didn't hit publish. So welcome to, if you're a YouTube viewer, 2 episodes in 1 week. One of them 2 weeks old that we didn't talk about.
All right.
If you're an audio listener, you know, no worries. And if you want to know where you can find us anywhere on the internet, you can follow us in a number of ways. You can find us on Facebook, facebook.com/apatheticenthusiasmshow. You can send us emails, apatheticenthusiasmshow@gmail.com. Over on Instagram, @apathetic_enthusiasm. On the web, apatheticenthusiasm.com. You can get video content, so long as I upload it, at youtube.com/apatheticenthusiasm. And then, yeah, you have all your favorite podcatchers. You can get audio versions of the podcast. Spotify, I don't know, Apple Podcasts. Yeah, I think we've been on there for over 10 years. Yeah.
So, staples. We're staples.
There you go.
Over there on Apple Podcasts.
Staples. In the top 10 million of podcasts.
That's right.
Easy. How the heck are you, my friend? It feels like too long.
It feels like we've been away from each other for a long time. Absence makes the heart grow fonder, and in this case, it's true. I missed you, friend. You know,
I miss you, old chum.
Lots of stuff has happened in this last 2 weeks between our last episode and now. For video listeners, you know, a lot has happened in.
A lot has happened in the 2 hours between episodes being posted. Yeah.
I mean, I don't even know where to start. I guess we could start with your championship stay over in South Carolina? Where was it?
Richmond. That's a good guess. Richmond, Virginia. yes. Well, I guess we could explain that we are kind of a week late in some of our discussions. We both took exciting trips last weekend. I had like a 12 and a half hour travel day last Monday, and then got home. My wife picked me up from the airport, immediately took my eldest to the doctor. She has been admitted all week. So, Monday night I was like, oh, I'm tired. I'm here with my other two kids. Like, can we podcast tomorrow? We're like, yes, we could do it tomorrow.
Yes.
Then something came up.
Absolutely.
Tomorrow. And then something came up the next day. And then I was like, well, I'm at the hospital. I can't. And then finally, here we are Monday. The stars have aligned. But yeah, I was out of town for the Disney Lorcana Challenge. This is going to be a rather long Lorcana minute. I reserve my right for extra time. But this is the...
Start the clock.
This is the premier event for Disney Lorcana. This is one of three 2,000-player tournaments that the actual... like Lorcana brand puts on. These have the best prizing. All of the most competitive players will attend and compete in these events. And it's your way to earn a seat in the national tournament, like the national championship, and potentially even worlds. I think the winner of the main event gets an automatic seat at the Worlds tournament. So it's a very difficult event to get into. You have to basically be sitting on Eventbrite the moment tickets go on sale and like refresh the page and do all these things. Thankfully, I was able to get two tickets, one for me and one for my son, to be able to compete in the main event. I have my competitor badge that is hanging out of frame and unfortunately is covered by other lanyards, but maybe I'll grab that in a second. So we went to Richmond. The main event takes place over 2 days. Starts on Saturday with 8 rounds of Lorcana, and then if you can manage to get 6 wins and to not get 3 losses, then you move on to day 2 for an additional 4 rounds of Swiss. Swiss is the type of organization that pairs you against opponents. And then if you are successful in those last 4 rounds, then you go into a top cut, which is like a top 64 or something that then whittles its way down into single elimination until they find one champion. Mm. It's a lot. To add to that, we also signed up for a pre-event, the promo pre-event that took place on Friday. This was the first time where they were doing side events before the start of the main competition. So that was a 7-round event that we played in. And then on Sunday, we signed up for 2 side events. Which was like 6 additional rounds. I think I did the math. I played, 21 best of 3 rounds of Lorcana over the 3 days. My brain was fried. My life was fried. Like, if you ask how I did, well, I competed. my son and I, we do pretty well in the local scene, right? We're a couple of the more competitive players in our local area. We've both won some local set championships and things like that. And we're talking like 14 to 25 people in a lot of those tournaments. So to go sit down in a 2,000 player tournament, it's intimidating. Mm-hmm. It's people take it very seriously. There's like serious prizing on the line, and like if top 8 gets a golden Mickey card that people are valuing in the tens of thousands of dollars. So it's it gets pretty intense, but at the end of the day, you're playing a card game with Disney characters on it. So like the community is pretty cool about it. Like it's a fun and welcoming community. And that's something that I really liked about the event as well, is like, it was a fun place to just be around a bunch of other people that enjoy the same card game that you do. Mm-hmm. But yeah, sat down first two rounds. I played decks that were very similar to mine, same color combination. And I was fortunate to win those two rounds. First two rounds, 2-0. Woohoo.
Easy.
Here we go.
You're like,
hard? Can I?
I could do this all day.
You want to just give me the golden Mickey right now? Like, what are we waiting for? Round three, I think so. Friends that were back home were following how we were doing online on the website. And I guess going into round three, I was like tied for like fourth place or something. But I was tied with like 400 people. Like, yeah. So
yeah.
But I played in round three, I played against an opponent who was very good. We went to three games. We actually went to time where we used up the entire, like, I think it was 55 minutes or 60 minutes that we had. And what happens in Lorcan if you go to time is then you go to turns. And what that means is the active player whose turn it is becomes turn zero. And then you have five turns for one person to win the game. So active players turn zero, they pass the turn, goes to the opponent, their turn one. If it gets to the player that is on turn five, if they have not successfully won the game and gotten to 20 points, then it becomes a draw and you get a tie, which is not as many points, but it's not a loss, right? Going back and forth, there's different strategy kind of when you're playing in turns, because you have to be really aggressive to try and get that win, but that can also kind of make you vulnerable to your opponent. I made a critical mistake and miscounted the turns. Mm. I was turn zero and my opponent put a die out and said, okay, we're on turn zero. And he put it on the one, because there's not a zero on a six-sided die. So we put it on the one, and then we were turning it to turn two, turn three, and so on and so forth. And I was thinking we were one turn ahead of what we actually were. So when it got to my turn, or as it was about to get to my turn and my opponent had not won, I thought I was the last turn and thought, if I can't win on this turn, it's a draw. It's tied. Not realizing that I was in fact turn four and my opponent had what he needed on board to win the game. So unfortunately got the loss there.
Yeah.
And ended up losing in round four. And so now I'm 2-2. I'm a little disgruntled. I have to literally win four more rounds. I'm 2-2. So I have to win four straight rounds if I'm gonna make day two. Consolation prize. If you can win three rounds, you get this foil Mulan promo card, which is like an incentive to keep playing. And so going around five, playing against that opponent, it was not a matchup I was familiar with, but I did my thing, managed to do okay, got the win, secure the Mulan promo card. Sweet. All right. Micro goal achieved, but the job's not done. Still got to win three more rounds to make day two. A lot of the competitive players from my local area that we've been hanging out with, some of them had already been eliminated at this point. Mm. Some of them are kind of at neck and neck with me. I think at this point, my son had already gotten his third loss in round five. So he was still playing for that Mulan promo, but he knew he was already not in day two.
Yeah.
So go into round six, play another opponent, managed to get a win there too. And I'm like, hey, okay. Won my first two, lost my second two, won my next two, still got a chance here, got to win two more games. Mulan secured. Caleb won a game. His Mulan was secured. And then going around seven and the start of the game, my opponent inks a green colored card and plays a blue colored card. This is a color combination that my deck is terrible against. I consistently lose against it. It's like one of my worst matchups. And sure enough, guy steamrolls me in two games. I was like, that's it. Okay. Like as soon as he inked and played those, I was like, I think this is where my day ends. This is, it was really interesting because when I sat down with my 4-2 record, everybody around me has similar records, right? Because the way you sit it, the way they arrange the tables and everything, you're sitting amongst and playing against people with the same record or or very similar records. Sitting right next to me on my left when I sit down is the only world champion in Disney Lorcana. DKP is his name. He won the world championship last year, which was the first world championship. And he's playing cards next to me. So I was like, hey, we got the same record. He went on to not lose again until late the next night. But me, I lost that game. I did get a selfie with him though. So that's I was good, like, hey, yeah. I mean, if you're sitting next to me, I'll get a picture with the champ. But yeah, at that point, like, yeah, these rounds last an hour, but then you have like the additional time for people doing those turns, right? When you go to turns. So that takes up time past the allotted hour. Then everybody has to report their scores and you have to make sure that all the stuff is entered correctly. And then they have to set the pairings for the next round. That entire process, along with probably some technical glitches, was causing there to be upwards of like 40 minutes, 50 minutes between those rounds. Yeah. So even though we started at like, was it 9 in the morning, I think. Those eight rounds were not done until like 8 p.m. It was like 12 straight hours of Lorcana.
Yeah.
It is exhausting. So going into round eight, I could have played that round. I wouldn't have earned me a day two seat and it wouldn't have gotten me any additional prizing. So at that point I was like, I went and found my opponent. I was like, hey, I'm conceding this round. I'm going to drop. I just wanted to tell you to your face and not no show on you. He's like, totally cool. I get it. He was going to be in the same boat as me with the same record. So like, it was just one of those like, yeah, we're tired. We're going to go get our Mulan cards and get out of here.
Yeah.
But yeah, so that was my run in the main event. In the seven round side event, I went 4-3, which was one win shy of getting some of the advanced like extra prizing. And then on Sunday we played in a bunch of side events to get tickets that you could turn into the prize wall. And that's where you could get extra types of prizing as well. Some of that prizing, I got a hat. Which, ooh, you know, if they would just have a merch table, I would pay cash for this hat. But I did get a official Disney Lorcana ball cap. It's subtle, but yeah,
it doesn't scream Lorcana.
It doesn't scream Lorcana. Very small logo on the back with like kind of like the lore symbol on the front. But I will wear that to my locals from now on to flex on those guys.
Nice.
And then you have your those cards, those fancy cards I was talking about for the video viewers. So these are some of those cards. The ones on the bottom have like a cool foiling effect on them.
Oh,
so
you fancy boy.
you get this Pegasus. Everybody that participates in the main event gets this Pegasus card. That's the Mulan card that I was talking about. And then these ones up here, I got, this is what the top 16 players in the main event get, but they get that fancy foiling on it. I bought the budget non-foil version. off the prize wall with some of my tickets. although that card is still rather expensive if you try to sell it online. So, I mean, it's like $120 or something.
Yeah, it's expensive. I wouldn't pay that much money.
I wouldn't either. Caleb also got a pin and some other things. But yeah, so that aside from actually playing Lorcana, it was a really fantastic event. Just the community, it was really cool to see how nice everybody was. Like, it can be intimidating going into that size of an event with that many people, but everybody I interacted with the whole weekend was really pleasant to be around. It was really fun. They had some artists that were there that were signing things. So we got these little posters from the different artists that signed a bunch of these cards. So I actually brought a bunch of these cards and had them sign them. Caleb got like a playmat signed. So that was fun. And then, yeah, what else? I don't know. That I've talked for 20 minutes.
yeah, but you know,
I don't know, like, any questions, Brandon?
I'm just listening in. I've never been, I guess the most competitive thing I've ever been in is like track and field when I was in like elementary school.
Third grade.
And then well, maybe I went to like a choir competition, I think. We also did not win that.
Okay.
Yeah, so a whole lot of not winning. I prefer the individualized games like Catan and you know, things that I can just use strategy for. I use my brain, yeah. You know, not my brawn, which I have plenty of.
nobody is going to question that on this podcast.
So what I would ask you, Travis, is what lessons did you learn from your experience there at the Lorcana Challenge? Give me one lesson.
I learned, bring the best deck. Okay. You're much more likely to win if you do that. Okay. I didn't. I learned a lot of micro lessons about how to play better, how to deal with different scenarios in a game. I learned about just the endurance it takes to compete in a tournament like that. And thankfully I was hydrating and I brought snacks and we ate when we could and things like that. But
and you weren't drunk.
I was not drunk.
Okay.
I also learned I was very tired by the end of it. So that when the like 20 somethings that I knew were like, hey, all right, now we're going to go out to dinner and hang out and do this afterwards. And I'm like, I'm going to my hotel and I'm going to sleep. I'll see you tomorrow. Cause I am 40.
Did you, I guess the question I had, more specific was, you know, I had this thought of you going to this tournament, being with a lot of, knowing at least a fair amount of people from your local area that you'd all played against and you'd all like were practicing against. Was there anything regional you noticed about the tournament? Did you notice that, like, you know, I know there's a Lorcana meta and it changes here and there, but do you feel like you practiced too much on your local people?
I think that was a conversation that came up, was like you rise to the level of your competition, right? And so when Caleb and I were just playing each other with our starter decks 2 years ago at the kitchen table, I just beat him all the time because like I had a little bit more understanding of strategy and we didn't have a lot to like play against. When we started going to local game stores, we just coincidentally started going to a place that had a little bit more casual environment. There were people that played, but they didn't play at a hyper competitive level. And so we got better playing against a variety of people, but we still weren't like winning like store set championships or anything or local tournaments. as we started to move around the city a little bit more and play in different groups and pay more attention to like the really good players and play where they were playing, we started to get better. But there is a cap, right? There's a cap to the best player in your local area might only be in the top 25% of a 2,000 player tournament, right? And as it turns out, from the nearly 10 people that I knew like regularly from my area that attended, only two of them made day two. Mm. And both of them were out within the first like two rounds of day two. So yeah, I played against really good players. There were people there who just love Lorcana and like maybe they lived close to the Richmond area and they're like, hey, this is a convenient event for us to go to. Let's really try to get tickets. But they might not be hyper competitive. I didn't see anybody in the main tournament that was like, I'm still trying to figure out how to play. Like everybody like had a firm grasp on the rules and structure of the game and all that. But there were definitely times where I would sit across an opponent who like I knew what they were doing. And then like diagonal from me was a player where I was like, man, why didn't I get that matchup? Like, I feel like that was maybe an easier person to get paired up against.
Yeah.
Not no slight on anybody, but that is when you have 2,000 people and like the matchups start randomly and then you get, you know, paired up against people with similar records. The more you win, the harder it's going to get. Right. Because if you continue to win, you're playing against people with lots of wins that have been winning. And I think that's the interesting thing about that, like Swiss format is if you win your first four games, like your competition's going to be tough and it's going to keep being tough. So, yeah, it's just like that was interesting. I kept telling myself, yes, there are 2,000 players here. I only have to play 8 of them on Saturday, right? And when I sit down and I lay out my play mat and I take out my little dice and I shuffle my cards, it's the same game I've been playing for 2 years. I'm just playing it against somebody that I didn't know yet. And maybe they had more practice. Maybe they were grinding out games online for hours and hours on end. I think my level of preparation, if I wanted to be really serious about making day two and those sorts of things, I understand the level of preparation that I need to have if I want to do that, is not what I was doing when I was like relaxing and enjoying the holidays 2 weeks before going to this event. And some people take this game very seriously and they like make a living off of it because they're on sponsored teams and they win big tournaments and get cash prizes that they then put back into the game. They're not there to collect Mickey Mouse cards. They're there to like win tournaments. They're, you know, like I have a whole collection of cards behind me because I like the cards. Like I love the game. I like the cards. Like I am a competitive person that also just enjoys the, you know, intellectual property and stuff too. So, I'm not like strictly like I will buy the 60 cards I need for the deck and then grind that deck and go try to win. So, I don't know.
And you know, also those players too, they have the money or the sponsorships to get those decks anyways.
It all
builds up towards that same, like, yeah, there it goes the same direction, the means to an end. Like, all right, invest in this, which means I can invest more, win more, invest in more, you know.
So. And like those players that I knew from my area, many of them at the Milwaukee DLC made day two. Like, I think 6 of them were all in day two. I think 1 or 2 of those people that I knew for sure had made it in Milwaukee actually made it to day two here. So that's another situation where it's like tournaments are different. Your matchups are going to be different. You may only see bad matchups. You may only see favorable matchups, you know, a combination of both, depending on what deck you bring. So there is variance, and it's cards, right? You may never draw that one card you need to deal with your opponent's board. You may, like in the case yesterday at a local set champs, you may draw everything perfectly if you're Caleb, and you may draw all of the bad cards if you're his opponent, and he just steamrolls his opponent in the finals. And it's a friend of ours that we've played with a long time, and it was just like, it's just unfortunate because he's like, I can't get anything, and Caleb is just having like the perfect hands over and over again.
Yeah.
So yeah, that's just how it goes sometimes. But I'm glad that I went. I'm glad that I competed. It has sort of broken the seal off of a level of intimidation to play in those types of events where I'm more open and willing to go and participate in some larger events like that. It is inconvenient that the United States is so large because and not many of these tournaments are centrally located in the middle of the country where I happen to be right now, which means you have to like travel.
Yeah,
right.
Yeah. And you have to hop in your car, you know, you gotta put together an overnight bag. You know, it's not just like
find a place to stay. Mm-hmm. Like, so
yeah,
there's an aspect.
Any of your cousins live there? Like, hey, maybe I could stay there for a day or two. And like, no, you still owe us money. It gets into that type of stuff.
So, I am interested. The next one of these tournaments takes place in like June or something. Mm-hmm. But it is in the Infinity format. This is the format where all cards are legal, not just cards from set, 5 to now, because of rotation, when they rotated out the first four sets of cards, that's core constructed. That's what the tournament was that I played in. Infinity is not as popular as a format, but that is the format for this next DLC. So I'm interested to see if more people kind of gravitate towards it, start practicing it, start playing it, because the game itself is trying to get people interested in that. But yeah, it's in Indianapolis. I could technically drive. It's a drivable distance, I guess.
Yeah, it's not
anything's drivable. If Alaska's drivable, if you know,
technically, yes. Yes, technically. Well, yeah. Indianapolis is probably like 12 hours away from you or something like that.
Yeah, something like that. Yeah.
Yeah, that's nothing. So, that's nothing.
I don't know. We'll see. I had a lot of fun.
To Indianapolis.
Oh, he's doing the math right now. Live on the podcast.
Yeah, 10 hours and 50 minutes. So yeah, about 12 hours, man. You got this.
There is a tournament in, is it Austin, Houston?
Okay. Let me look it up.
And that's
Houston.
Like six. I think it's like 6 hours away.
Yeah. 6 hours and 30 minutes, man.
Too easy.
Pretty good. Yeah. Pretty good. Just, pretty close.
Just get up at like 2 a.m., drive 6 hours,
mm-hmm.
play 10 hours of cards, and then drive home. So I think it's a 2-day event, so you'd probably have to find a couch to sleep on or something.
Okay. Yeah.
You sleep in your car. It's the best way to get the most restful night's sleep.
Yeah, and like
you just win the tournament.
And you modify your dashboard to be a pull-out Lorcana table, and then you just practice you
hack,
there.
You hack the dash so that you can play the online client and grind out some games using the buttons on your steering wheel. That's how it works.
And that's how you can practice while you're on the way to the tournament, and you like press the button, and every once in a while it's like,
yeah, I got adaptive cruise.
Yeah,
it's goes fine.
That's the wrong move. Also pay attention to the road.
Yeah, and then it like careens off the road if you make a bad play. Yeah. That's good.
Yeah, it threatens you.
Anyway, I still love Lorcana. I am very excited that I'm done playing in set championships and like tomorrow starts reveal season for the next set, which comes out in mid-February. So this is like that zone where like competitive Lorcana for me is kind of over until the new sets come out and stuff. And I can just kind of like, if I could show you my desk right now, there are stacks of cards like around my keyboard because I won that set championship a few weeks ago and they gave me a whole box of cards and it was just like extra stuff that like there were some good cards in there, but then there was just like a bunch of extra stuff that I didn't need.
Yeah.
So this whole box is all bulk cards that I have more than four of that I don't need. It's too much cardboard. Too much cardboard.
Do you have any?
Well, what can I say? I love it.
Do you have any Clarabelles in there?
In that box?
Uh-huh.
No, that's a good card. I wouldn't put Clarabelle in bulk. I'll tell you a story. Some of my friends in the local area, big card people. Longtime Pokemon and Yu-Gi-Oh folks. They've been in the biz for a while. And one person likes to collect enchanted versions, the highest rarity of many of these cards, and then they actually play with them in their decks, right? So a deck that could be, you know, $300 to $500 suddenly becomes $1,000, $1,200 in value because they're playing all these really rare, hard to find cards. I'm hanging out at the venue on Sunday. And I'm kind of in between rounds in my side events. And one of the guys that's out there is like, hey, are you still at the venue? We're at our Airbnb. We're not coming back. I loaned somebody some cards. Would you be able to get them for me and bring them back? I was like, yeah, sure. Yeah, no problem. Just, tell me who it is. I'll be at this table. I'm playing this next round. It takes like 2 hours for this guy to find me. But eventually it's between rounds. I'm just sitting there with my son and one of our other friends. And this guy walks up. He's like, hey, Travis, right? And I'm like, yeah, hey, so-and-so. And he's like, okay, here's the cards. And he just starts laying out probably like 15 cards. All of them either holo foil or enchanted. The guy's laying out the equivalent of like $700 in front of me. He's like, all right, let me take your picture next to these cards. And he like takes my picture and sends it to our mutual friend to make sure that the guy he's handing all these cards to is the intended recipient.
Yeah, I'm Travis. Yeah.
That's me. Sure, that's the ticket. And he's like, all right, that's you. Cool. And then I just take all these cards and I put them in a deck box. And I'm like, all right. Now I have to like be the mule that like, you know, transports these across state lines or something like that.
I ended up in a balloon and swallowing them.
Yeah. You got to eat those cards. You got to. I ended up getting them back to the owner, thankfully. But yeah, that was an interesting interaction as well. But I don't know. All told, from the staff to the judges, the artists, the broadcast team, like everybody there, and of course all of the attendees and competitors, like it was just a fun environment to be in. So I was really glad that we got the chance to go because it's something that me and my son absolutely loved, but like nobody else in my family gets. so they're all like, we're glad you had a good time. I still don't get it. I don't know. But it was a whole lot of fun.
Like, good for you guys, but don't make us go. Don't make us ever experience that.
I did. I was like, hey, Sienna, there were like a group of ladies making friendship bracelets at one of the tables that were like, and I'm like, you love making your Taylor Swift friendship bracelets? She's like, yeah, no, I'm not going, Dad. I'm not going to one of those things. I was like, Sheena, you love, you know, Disney, like there are people cosplaying. There were people, you know, just hey, like doing these other things. She's like, yeah, no, Nah, I'm good. I'm fine.
I don't want to go. Don't want to do it. Yeah, yeah, it's okay. Not everybody has to have.
Well, that's
the same
pretty much how your
hobbies.
Weekend was too, right? like,
yeah, no,
your,
yeah.
That, your weekend was the same.
It was the same. And after this break, yeah, I'm not gonna. The break will go in wherever it goes. I don't care about this show. I care about
the
Rick
high,
and
Morty. High level of production quality we do on this podcast.
Yeah, so two trips. Last week, the weekend before, went to Ojai, with Chelsea, and you know, it was our anniversary.
After the holidays, there's so much to clean up and get ready for the coming year. This leaves me exhausted and a lot of things falling off my to-do list. It's time to lock in, and Omaha Steaks delivers everything you crave to reset after the holidays. An order from them means having high-quality Omaha steaks on hand at all times. I'm a big meat lover myself, and I always go with medium rare. But there's also plenty of poultry and other options available. Omaha Steaks offers unrivaled quality and variety, and every bite is backed by their 100% guarantee. A family-owned company with over 100 years of expertise in the meat industry. Let Omaha Steaks deliver high-quality proteins right to your door. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide during their end-of-season sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code YUM at checkout. That's omahasteaks.com, promo code YUM. Terms apply. See site for details. Go to www.omahasteaks.com to get 50% off site-wide during their end-of-season sale. And use promo code YUM at checkout for an extra $35 off. Minimum purchase may apply. Thanks to Omaha Steaks for sponsoring us.
Support for this podcast is brought to you by Walden University. Ever catch yourself thinking, what if I could go after what I actually want and really make a difference? You're not alone, and that's exactly why I want to tell you about Walden University. For over 50 years, Walden has helped working adults like you get the W with the knowledge and skills to build the future you want and make a difference where it matters most. If you've been waiting for the right moment, this is it. Head to waldenu.edu and take that first step. Walden University, set a course for change, certified to operate by Chev.
22
years. Wow.
Despite our best efforts, we made it 22. And yeah, so Ojai, California. It's just like a small little town, lots of hippies. So we did that. We did some wine tasting. We did some olive oil tasting. We hung out.
Do you just eat straight olive oil when you taste olive oil, or do you like dip stuff in it?
We would have preferred dipping stuff in it, but the way they were letting us try everything, they had us just like little paper cup. That olive oil tastes like jalapeno, you know?
Oh, okay. So it's like infused oil.
Yeah. So it's not
okay.
But they do have regular olive oil that are like, oh, try the non-virgin, try the extra thick and gooey version. I don't know if that's that thing.
Try the 10W40 version.
but they would have the olive oils, different olive oils, but they also had different balsamics. So then you could like mix and match as you're trying. Just be like, oh, what does this olive oil taste like with this balsamic? And so it was like we got this like a green chili olive oil with I think pineapple balsamic. And so like we tried it and like, that's pretty good. That's pretty good. So that's one of the things we came out of there with. Let's see, wine tasting. So here we went to three different wineries, and there's a handful of wineries in Ojai. And here's what Chelsea and I figured out about wine tasting. After like the second one, we're like, okay, we'll do one more. But then we realized we just don't want to talk. We're kind of tired of people talking to us about wine. Just give me a glass. And, but every, you know, nothing against people who drink wine and go to tastings and like they're find themselves as connoisseurs. You know, after like like each flight, each like wine tasting flight is like five different wines. So that's, you know, 15 things that we did. And every single one of those is just like a little pour. And then like, so this is the soft, our regional soft blanc. It comes from cocoa berry bees. And, you know, you can really taste the cracked pepper mixing in with the lenient brigade sauce.
Like, I like that you as a person are so authentic that you can't even pretend to be that pretentious. Like, you're just like...
Thank you. Thank you for acknowledging. Yeah. And so... He's like, okay, yeah, we're done. Like, just give us the wine.
Yeah. We'll take a bottle of this and a bottle of that, and we'll see ourselves out.
Yeah, and so we went to like an Italian restaurant that night, and which would have been like the perfect place for wine. And I was like, I'm full. I don't want any of that. Actually, I don't even know if there was alcohol there, but it was okay. It was okay. Because I had some steak. Let's see. But yeah, so there was that. And then it was a nice little weekend. We tried to go see a record store like the last day, but I was closed, so we said, screw it, let's go home.
All right.
Let's see. So
that was awesome.
So that's trip number one. Trip number two was this last weekend. I went with the boys. The boys, and when I say the boys, I just mean me and my friend Justin. We went to Las Vegas this last weekend.
Did you pluralize your one friend?
Yeah, I did. It's Justin the boys.
That's fine. I did a boys trip with me and my son. So
there you go.
I get it. Yeah.
You get it. So we went to Las Vegas. So the reason we went to Las Vegas, I don't have any aspirations to go to Vegas because I'm not that big a gambler. And I know that when I go, I'm going to gamble. And what I'm going to do is I'm going to get impatient with, like, I picked a game that I could sit there all night and just like dwindle, win some, lose some, but I'm like, well, it basically evens out over time. But then I get bored and I'm like, okay, I've dwindled enough, all on red.
Max bet. Let's
all on red and then immediately lose. We're like, okay, well, that was that. So sure enough, I do still do that in Vegas, just to confirm. But so the reason we actually went out there was, so the Punk Rock Museum is in Las Vegas. The Punk Rock Museum was founded by Fat Mike of NoFX. And so this museum has a bunch of artwork. It has a bunch of like flyers. It has instruments from a bunch of different bands. And it goes through like classic punk, like Iggy Pop and New York Dolls and stuff like that. And like all the way to like the modern stuff, you know, with like things that bands that I've never heard of, or like Taking Back Sunday, which is a band I haven't heard from or heard of. So they're really, really cool. So it goes in like different like eras of areas of punk. So like got your New York, you got your East, you got your like West Coast LA or San Francisco punk, and you got, you know, British Invasion, stuff like that. So really, really cool. Now what's even cooler about it is it has people from punk bands who come in and do tours all the time. So this particular weekend, NoFX at the Punk Rock Museum, they released a NoFX section for their 40 years.
Exhibit,
yes. As those areas are popularly called. So they had like a NoFX exhibit, and so to help kind of kick this off, the weekend was, the tours were run by the band members from NoFX. So on Friday, Fat Mike, El Jefe, the guitarist, one of the guitarists were giving a tour. when I signed up for this, when I went to buy the tickets, I wanted to try to get the Fat Mike El Jefe tour, but it was sold out. But Saturday, there were a couple spots open for Smelly, Eric Smelly Sandlin, who is the drummer for NoFX. And so Justin and I have met him a couple times. He will never remember us, but we see him at like Punk in the Park or these other shows. And it's like, okay, yeah, hey, he's got his Pickle Sticks surfboard company. He always has a booth there. So we always talk to him. And then he hits us in the nuts because that's what he does. Okay, so like, yeah, this is really cool. We'll go on a tour with him. And the tour was like two hours, basically. And he is just walking us through the exhibits. He doesn't talk
when,
to like...
When you say us, like how many people are on this tour?
Oh, yeah. You? There's about like maybe 15, 20 people. Which sounds it's not that many when we think about it. And so like it's just him with us, you know, 15, 20 people, like going through the exhibits, you know, picking the things he wants to talk about, things that like it's not scripted at all. He's just basically like
Yeah.
He's like, I'm gonna see shit and I'm gonna talk about it and you might like it, you might not, but yo, hey, this is what we're doing. So it was really, really cool. I thought he was so good at kind of giving tours, talking about his history with punk and what it means to him. Like very, very sincere. It's like very,
yeah.
The music and everything really, really means a lot to him. His time with NoFX has clearly meant a shit ton to him. He talked about like the other bands that they'd played with over the years, you know, people they still talk to, things that they could have done. Like Smelly was talking about this young band that they had just lost their drummer, like their drummer quit or whatever. And so they were like, hey, Smelly, we need a new drummer. You want to join us? He's like, no, I've got my own fucking band. I don't need your band. Like, thanks for asking, but that's not what I need to do. And instead they went with Travis Barker from Blink. And he's like, you know what? If I made some different choices, maybe I'd would have more money now. Then like he's telling stories about
hindsight is always
20, 40. And he talks about like 26. All these different other like famous band people are out there. Like he knows the guitarist for the Misfits and like walked past Danzig and he's like, man, that and Eric Smelly is tall and he's like, man, that's a short little dude. Just like want to give him a hug. Jelly Biafra from Dead Kennedys. He knows like all the guys from Lagwagon. Just like in the middle of the tour, he was like, oh hey, sorry guys, I gotta take this. It's Jay Bentley from Bad Religion. And then he walked around the corner. Like,
and then are you like, oh, let me pick that up for you. Let me pick that name that you just dropped.
What I thought honestly was like, that was like a weird, like, oh, wait. Oh, he's on the phone. No, he's not. He's right there. I thought that's what it was going to be. But no, he legitimately was like, oh, I got it. He's calling me. I just got to take this real fast. So again, it takes us all the way to the end. He said like some really, really, cool things. He's kind of this gruff old white dude. He's got a hand, like kind of the cool ass mustache. He talks shit about different bands and people is like, but he's like, that's my opinion. That is just my opinion. So we get all there. It's two stories. On the second story, there's like another exhibit. There's a vinyl shop up there. There's a tattoo parlor up there if you want to get a tattoo from the punk rock museum. So around this last area, it's like shows a lot of newer punk bands. And I say newer, I think like the most recent was like Bowling for Soup or something like that. And I don't even,
of Phineas and Ferb title fame.
Oh, yeah, cool. So we get to that section and he's like, a little bit before that, like got to a little segment where like his offspring and like Green Day, he's like, look, they never sold out. Just to be clear, these people didn't sell out. You know, they didn't change their music to get popular. They got popular because of their music. But then he's like, but also this was like the death of fucking punk era for me. It's like, or it was all about polish and clean and stuff like that. So anyways, so then at the end, now I'm fast forwarding back to the end. There's a little area with like a VMA and Bowling for Soup outfit and Taking Back Sunday and like Warp Tour, where I'm like, I don't recognize any of these fucking names. But he was kind of saying that, like, this is, you know, who the fuck are these people? Like, it was like, oh, the Bowling for Soup. Like, it was like a suit he wore at the Emmys or something. And he was voted like worst dressed by Joan Rivers. And it was like, oh, that's real fucking punk, isn't it? And so as we walked away from that section, Justin was like, ooh, man, he's really opinionated about that. And then he's finishing up the tour and he's standing in front of a wall with like a crowd in the background, you know, like a concert or whatever, right? And the view is from up on stage. And so he's like, you know, what I just said in there about all those guys, man, that's bullshit. Like, that's a fucked up old man thing for me to say. And he said that, like, when they opened up the punk rock museum, he was like sitting in front, because it's like kind of like a auditorium looking thing with it. Yeah. He's sitting up front. He's like, and I looked up at the wall, and I thought, like, this could be me on stage right now, looking at all those people having a blast. He's like, oh, look at this guy on the wall. Like, he's fucking happy. Definitely not listening to our music. And he's like, that's when I knew I was wrong. The new music, the new punk, it's not mine. It's like, whatever it is that defines you or makes you feel it. Like, who am I to say what's right or wrong? You know, so like I really appreciated that about him taking that, like,
yeah,
it's not my thing, but
like
it rocks.
That's it's not the same as the art that he makes and that like the bands that he's been a part of, like, but there's an audience, right? Mm-hmm. Like, and these are other artists, and obviously thanks to commercial success, like, they've done all right.
Yeah,
it is funny. It is funny, just as an aside, like, when I look up, like, you know, Spotify will do AI generated playlists or whatever, right? And I'll just be like, give me a punk rock playlist. And then, like, certain songs on there, I'm like, yeah, this is a song I want to listen to. And then it's like Avril Lavigne comes on. And I'm like, listen, I like Skater Boy as much as the next person, but this wasn't really the vibe I was looking for with the playlist Spotify.
Since you've been gone. I guess it could be.
I mean, it's kind of edgy, Kelly Clarkson. But yeah, so... And sometimes it is punk music, but it is the more commercial, you know, pop punk,
right?
That I like to listen to as well.
Yeah,
you know, I enjoy an occasional Warp tour in my youth.
I made fun of one of my coworkers when the Warp tour announced a new, you know, another go around, and I was like, I don't recognize any of these bands, and so it was right when he left that the new band area. I also said to Justin, oh yeah, like that's Tyler's music in there. Tyler being our coworker. Anyways, one thing is interesting about
I'm really curious what the lineup is for the 2026 Warped Tour now. Let's look at the Long Beach one. Festival info, 2025 lineup. Here we go. Headliners. 311. I know them.
Oh, yeah, I don't care about them. Unknowns.
I've heard on each line, I maybe know one of these bands. Nope, don't know any on that. Oh, Bowling for Soup.
Oh, there Bowling for go. Soup. Bowling hey, for they're there.
Boys Like Girls. Yeah.
Okay. Devil Wears Prada. Is it? Are they
Anne Berlin, I listened to. They were a Christian punk band back in the day.
Is it? Oh, that's that song. Whoa, Black Betty, Anne Berlin.
I don't think that's them. Mm. Wow, there are a lot of bands on here though. Young Gravy is on here.
Oh man, I love. Well, I don't want to say I love, and then the name of that band.
Red Jumpsuit Apparatus.
Oh, I do.
The Aquabats.
Oh, Aquabats. Yeah, okay.
Aquabats.
But like those bands are not enough to carry a festival for me. I think.
You don't want to go out to Long Beach to watch Rise Against play with Silly Goose. that's a band that's on his lineup.
When you put it like that.
Less Than Jake, More Than Jake.
Oh, Less Than Jake's on
Jack
there.
Jack Kays. Oh. Less Than Jake's on there. Yeah. Goldfinger.
Oh, Goldfinger's on there. Oh man, dude, I did miss out.
Like there's some legit bands on here.
Yeah. Well, part of the Warp Tour thing too was you had to like it's basically like you had to reserve tickets before they even told you who the bands were.
Ooh.
For that, like who all the bands were announced, which was kind of weird. But
yeah, that is weird. Okay, here's the deal. We've talked for an hour.
Oh,
we've
shit. Talked about. Oh, I talked a lot.
We've talked about three trips. But we're making up for lost time. So we've talked about trips. We've talked about stuff. But you brought up a movie to me the last time we talked, and I ended up watching it on an airplane. And one, I watched it on my phone on an airplane. Like it wasn't like in the back of like the seat. Right.
Mm-hmm.
But one thing I recommend nobody does is start a 2.5 hour long mystery movie on an hour and a half long flight.
Mm.
Because you can get real invested in a plot line, and then boom, please raise your seat backs and tray tables as we make our final descent into the Oklahoma City area. It has been our pleasure flying with you. And you're like, but who's the murderer? The movie in question is Wake Up Dead Man.
Wake up.
A glass onion mystery. You watched this film, Brandon?
Yeah, I watched it. It was good.
What? All right, and that's our synopsis, everybody.
I didn't realize you wanted me to do the synopsis for it. You want me to do the synopsis?
No, I don't. It's a Glass Onion movie. Was it Rian? Ryan?
Yeah, Ryan.
How do you
Johnson?
Say his first name?
Ryan Johnson.
Ryan Johnson.
Yeah.
The guy that was too scared to make another Star Wars movie, according to Kathleen Kennedy.
Oh, did she say
which
that?
She in not so many words said something to that effect, and then he immediately responded on Twitter like, "No, what? No, it wasn't." Like, that's not how that went down at all. But yeah, these Glass Onion movies, the Benoit Blanc Mysteries series, played by the actor who you will say, because I'm terrible at remembering actors' names.
Oh, yeah, yeah. Craig T. Nelson.
That's it. I know that's not it.
What's I forget his first name. Craig, right? Jefferson.
Daniel Craig.
Daniel Craig.
Jefferson Airplane. Like the airplane I watched the movie on.
Jefferson Craig. Craig. Daniel Craig. Yeah. So
yeah, James Bond.
Benoit.
The James Bond guy.
Benoit Blanc.
Benoit Blanc. Josh Brolin in this movie.
Uh-huh. All-star cast. The one guy who played in that Sherlock show. He was the dude, my brain. You know, he's a bad guy. He's a famous
Glenn Close.
Famous, the famous Sherlock Holmes, like key bad guy, like Moriarty.
Jeremy Renner.
Moriarty. There you go. He plays Moriarty in the Sherlock show. He's in there.
Talking about
Glenn Close is in there.
Yeah. Thomas Hayden Church.
That's right.
Yeah. Anyway.
And then a random guy.
Very interesting. The random guy. A random guy. Like, who isn't even, like, the main character doesn't have top billing on Google. Like, he's not even listed as an actor in the movie.
Oh.
All right. So here's what I want to talk about real quick before we get out of here. This is a very interesting movie because it is a murder mystery whodunit that takes place in a very small Catholic church with a very sort of bombastic and somewhat radical priest at the center of the film. A lot of religious sort of subtext and commentary throughout. And as like the two polar opposite ends of the religious spectrum on this podcast, right? I was really interested in how you felt, like, because I feel like we watched the same movie, but probably through very different eyes. And there were aspects of it that I really liked. And again, I don't come from like a Catholic background. I don't like the sort of legalistic and like procedural things that people do in the Catholic Church. I don't like understand or know a lot about. But there was something to me that was really like, I really liked the main character, the young priest that was going into this church, who like was very adamant about like wanting to be an example of like Christ's love for these people. And like, it seemed very genuine that he was like this reformed boxer who had like a bad past. He had killed somebody, I guess. Like, we don't get like all the specifics of that, but then he's like, no, I want to help people, and like I believe in this mission to like really you know, like help, like love people.
Mm-hmm.
And then he goes into this environment where it's sort of the opposite of that, right? It's people that are using religion and using, you know, God to kind of like prey on people and like and make people feel guilty and make people feel like, I don't know, bad, really, and then mm-hmm. and then manipulate others and things like that. I don't know, like how did you feel about that dynamic and the characters, and how did you I don't know, how did you kind of interpret those relationships?
If I had to rate them in order, I would put this one at the third. It would be the third favorite of mine of the series, okay. I guess.
Sure.
That's not because of the religious stuff.
Fair.
You know, just let you know. It wasn't as like the mystery wasn't as maybe Benoit Blanc's like I wasn't like fascinated or wowed by him necessarily in this one. Maybe it was his hairstyle, I think.
sure. It was a little bit longer, I guess. I would say that, like, sort of that, like, concluding, like, monologue where he, like, lays everything out for, of like, that he solves the mystery and kind of, like, I feel like this movie tried to, like, kind of, like, turn that a little bit, and, like, it felt like midway through the movie he was gonna, like, lay things out, and then it turns out not to be the case. And then there's, like, a misdirect of, oh, you thought this person was a killer? Well, no, it's actually this other person's gonna admit to it. And then, oh, he didn't actually admit to this, it was something else. And so, like, it wasn't as succinct, maybe, but, like, and then there's, like, all this, like, weird kind of, like, it wasn't him solving it so much as, like, another character, like, just confessing to what went down.
Yeah. And how the confession comes is I think where the final twist is.
Sure.
But confess. Yeah. The whole Catholicism and confession, it always seems like a really weird thing to me. Like, the priest, they have to keep it to themselves. So I'm like, I can go in and to a priest and say, yeah, I murdered my entire family, and, like, 10 Our Fathers, 13 Hail Marys, and turn yourself in, son, you know, like, things like that. But then I'm like, no, I'm not. See you later. Like, shit, he's gone. Damn it.
Another one got away.
Why do the murderers keep coming to me? But so that's interesting to me. And in the priest that goes in there, I forget what that priest's name is, the boxer priest. He is there kind of to support the archdiocese that is there currently. Well, that's who, what's his name? From the Goonies. I forgot his name already.
Josh Brolin?
Josh Brolin. Hey, thank you, Thanos. Josh Brolin's older priest runs it. And, like,
he was Wicks. He was the character Wicks.
Okay.
Yes.
And all these people are really there for Josh Brolin and his. So then there's, like, scenes where Josh Brolin is like, Father, will you take my confession? And Wicks is like, yeah, of course, I'll do it. And then Josh Brolin just starts saying really, really terrible, awful, nasty things, just to make the priest, the Wicks, uncomfortable. And there is another section later on where, like, eventually Brolin takes Wicks' confession, is basically like,
no, Wicks was Brolin.
Oh, Wicks.
Judd is the other one.
Gotcha. Mm-hmm. So Judd has Wicks take confession, and how quickly Wicks breaks it is like, is just like it. The hypocrisy of some folks in there. So,
yeah,
going back to your question about how I felt about the movie, what I really liked was, you know, I try, if anybody's listening by now, you know not to listen for spoilers. So, spoiler territory for anybody who is still with us.
Yeah, we're an hour and 10 minutes into this. If you haven't watched Wake Up Dead Man, I recommend it. Mm-hmm. It's on Netflix. Go watch it. We're going to talk about spoilers. Thanks for listening.
Yeah, thanks. Okay, now back to it. With Benoit Blanc not changing his opinion of religion, his belief or lack of belief, like, not changing anything like that, still recognizing the good of Judd. And him truly believing and believing in the power of belief and, like, the good Catholics, right? I like that aspect because that's kind of how I feel about it. I don't believe. Yeah. If I believe, then it'll be a cold day in hell. You know what I'm saying? just kidding. Well, and it makes sense because then I believe, and then there's hell.
It was interesting to me because
I believe in the power of good people, you know, and like,
yeah. Yeah.
like true belief in the teachings of Christ, like that is what everyone should strive to be in religion and in my mind. And, you know, like it's the hypocrisy of the Wixes, that really damage perspective, I guess. Anyways.
Yeah, no, and I think that was what I really liked about the movie was the director could have come out and made a statement about religion and been very much for or against, right, based on his personal beliefs or whatever. But he portrayed a variety of characters that exists, you know, in our world. There are people who, you know, believe in a number of religions and believe in the good sides of that, and like want to help people and love others and care for others, and then there's people who kind of follow personalities or follow, you know, religious people that don't always like have the same opinion, or mm-hmm. or they're less prioritized on helping others and more about helping themselves or bringing themselves up or you know, making money or different things like that. And so like there's commentary in the movie about like both of those things, and it's kind of left up to the viewer to be like, all right, like if you're interested in taking care of people and being a good person, like ideally that wins out in the end. But there's it takes all kinds, right? Yeah. And I didn't watch a single trailer. I literally, you were like, hey, there's a new Knives Out movie, you should watch it. And I was like, oh yeah, I remember hearing that one was coming out, I'll download it for my flight. And then immediately was hooked, like was interested in the characters, interested in the story. It probably wasn't my favorite either, but it was fun to watch.
Mm-hmm.
And definitely was like an hour and 40 minutes into it, and we were touching down in the airport, and I was like, I have to go home and watch the end of this. Like
you just got in your car and yeah. sat in the parking lot like, oh, honey, flight's delayed.
No, she picked me up. Oh. She picked me up.
You still could have.
So I just sat in the back, like not talking to her. How was your trip? Hold on. I'm just watching this.
Flight's delayed.
I'm just sitting in the terminal in my home airport, just like
on the baggage claim.
Yeah, sorry. She's watching my life 360. Like, I know you're here. It notified me when you landed. I don't know. We're having a loop around Dallas. It's, you know, it's turbulence and stuff.
It says you're in the building. Yeah. No, it's because it signals tied to the antenna of the building.
I can see you through the window of the airport. Anyway,
all
right.
They took a picture of me. That's a cutout. And so you're just like,
that'll do it for this episode. Yeah. Right. Thank you everyone for sticking around. Hopefully we remember to like upload these and you can watch them. If we do that, let us know your thoughts. If there's something you want us to discuss in the future, if you have any questions about Lorcana, feel free to ask me directly.
If you have any questions about smelly
punk music or wine tasting.
This is the last thing. I didn't even talk about it. I meant to. I forgot. Like many things, which is Smelly is from my high school, my hometown. So yeah, he when the tour started, he was like, Yeah, you know, I'm from a little fucking town in California. Is anybody know about Glendale? I was like, yeah, I know Glendale. He's like, oh shit, really? Where? I'm like, La Crescenta. He's like, no, fucking, I'm from Tahunga. I'm like, all right. And then later, I was talking to him a little bit, and then he's like, yeah, it was either go to Verdugo High School or go to Crescenta Valley High School. And my parents were like, fucking go to that one. You won't get shot there. And I was like, if he graduated in like 82, 84, something like that, he went to fucking high school with some of my family. I said, so weird. Anyways, So if you are interested in knowing more about NOFX and the border of Tahunga and La Crescenta, which is the street Lowell, where there's an In-N-Out at the top, which he's like, you know where In-N-Out is? I'm like, yeah, man, are you kidding me? We're best friends now. Anyways,
is that the one that we went to when I crashed your friend's wedding?
Yeah, sure is.
Hey, look at that. Now we're best friends, Smelly. Now we're best friends.
I'm going to invite him on the podcast. So we just talk about that.
All right, let's just talk about. Yeah, I'm going to start. Yeah, inviting other people. All right, that's it.
All right, we're done.
It's good to pod. We're done. We don't have a Swifflecast after this, so you know our lives don't have meaning anymore. Thanks everybody for listening. Like, subscribe, do all the things over on YouTube. Rate and review 5 stars on your podcatcher of choice. We love you. Thank you for listening. Till next time, I'm Travis.
And I'm Brandon. Thank you.
Rip. Bye.
Hey, football fans, picture this. You bet on your favorite player to score the first touchdown in the game, but his teammate scores instead. If this happens, BetMGM wants to give you a second chance at the end zone. With BetMGM's second chance promotion, you'll get your stake back if your first touchdown scores second instead. That's right. Bet on any pro football player to score the first touchdown of the game. If you're right, you win. If your player scores second, you get your stake back in cash. With BetMGM's second chance offer, you have a chance to keep the fun going after the first player crosses the goal line. Try a first TD score wager with confidence today. BetMGM, make it legendary. BetMGM and GameSense remind you to play responsibly. See BetMGM.com for terms. 21 plus only. This specific promotional offer is not available in Mississippi, Pennsylvania, Puerto Rico, or Ontario. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. Available in the U.S. 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY 467-369 for New York. 1-800-NEXT-STEP for Arizona. 1-800-327-5050 for Massachusetts. 1-800-BETS-OFF Iowa. 1-800-981-0023 for Puerto Rico. Existing customer offer. Subject to eligibility requirements. Rewards paid back and unrestricted withdrawable funds. In partnership with Kansas Crossing Casino and Hotel.
If you're a podcast host, listen up, this one's for you. My name is Allie Jackson. I'm the host of Finding Mr. Height, a dating and relationship podcast that I've been doing for 4 years now, sharing my positive and practical approach to dating that's built on my own life experience. And I wanted to share another experience that I've had, my secret behind monetizing my show. It's called Red Circle. And I was just telling my colleague about how much I love their platform. With Red Circle, not only am I getting a seamless hosting experience, but I also love the support I receive in ad sales. It's not just typical ad sales either. It's targeted opportunities based on my show and my life. And the platform is super simple. You just set your preferences and Red Circle matches you with sponsors that align with your show. You can vet every opportunity and their platform gives you great analytics. More recently too, my Red Circle team has brought me opportunities outside of my podcast on social media to really augment the podcast partnerships, bring them full circle. I just can't recommend them enough. If you want to give it a try, go to redcircle.com to get your free trial. That's redcircle.com for a free trial.